Hello, I'm Katie Manning, and you're very lucky because you're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio. Enjoy!
This is Gallifrey Public Radio, a weekly podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of Doctor Who. We travel through classic and new episodes, explore the extended universe, and play a few games from time to time. We do discuss news, content that has been officially released, and the occasional interesting rumor, but we'll warn you before anything considered spoilers comes up.
Welcome to episode 415 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where this traveling band of oddities is forever captured in audio recording. And now that you're listening, we're free! We're free to roam again! I'm Julie.
I'm Kier.
I'm Haley.
And I'm Jay. And this week, Cardiff goes Carnival as the team deals with the Night Travelers, a rather worrisome bunch of sideshow performers who apparently carry around a flask for a much different reason than most carnies that we remember.
Who remembers the carnies?
Everyone I didn't remember.
Oh, carnies.
I didn't remember these carnies, that's for sure.
Carnies, roustabouts, whichever you choose. We always like to begin these rewatches into the Torchwood scope by, well, determining how much we actually remembered, and then just sort of getting some top-line reaction to them. So, Haley, as you got to see what came from out of the rain, how did the story start to finish leave you feeling?
The only thing about this entire episode that I had remembered until I rewatched it was that guy's mustache.
That's fair. That's indelible.
And I feel like that might be all I remember a year from now.
Okay. That's absolutely valid. That's
it,
fine.
It just becomes burned in your memory as a shape, like a logo, and you don't remember why.
I might remember his teeth this time, too.
Yeah. If you were to iconify each episode and season, this would just be a big, crappy mustache. Yeah. And maybe some
horrible teeth underneath.
Yeah. Real bad. Jay, how'd you feel about this one?
I vaguely remembered bits and pieces of, like, the dude cutting the film together and maybe I didn't remember much at all. I didn't even remember the mustache, so Haley's got me beat here.
I got nothing. I know that I've watched every episode at least two or three times, and I could not remember this one.
I guess the resounding question is whether or not this is going to stick with us at all. Well, maybe forcing ourselves to talk about it for a little bit is going to, at least we'll remember the conversation, if not what we were actually discussing. I know we watched it before. I swear we've talked about this.
So it's one of those where they get erased from your memory and then you just can't remember anything surrounding the whole episode.
Someone exposed this entire podcast episode to the sunlight.
Oh.
Anyway. All right. Well, let's dive in.
So, the Electro is the only one left.
Could the Night Travelers have performed there?
Possibly.
If cinema killed the traveling show, maybe this is their way of fighting back. Their only chance to escape before every old movie theater and piece of film has gone. What better way to get revenge?
They were left forgotten. On pieces of film.
And now they're looking for a new audience.
The plot on the surface is, like, the summary that you get online is literally as deep as this thing goes. Somehow, this troupe of performers that was once a danger to humanity, we don't know exactly why or for what purpose, get phased out, they get unearthed when some film gets shown, they terrorize again. That's effectively it. Are there holes in this storyline, or is it just a matter of don't think too hard and just watch the story? Do you think they are missing anything?
It doesn't have a lot of meat to it. This is a very popcorn episode.
It's very much, I didn't find a lot of enjoyment in it because there were so many times where I was like, why? What the hell? Why?
I do want to pick some of those apart. Julie, do you concur?
I feel like there could have been something if the danger were more.
Yeah.
Because absolutely. I don't feel like it got serious enough. And except for people actually died, which is terrible, but you didn't feel the weight of that as you were watching.
That's not that big of a deal on a Torchwood episode.
Yeah. But an entire family, right, gets taken. And these people, and so, yes, to Haley's point, this is something that we've grown accustomed to. But even from within the scope of the show, there was no emotion. It was just like they popped into the hospital. These people, something's wrong. Their mouths look weird. Go find them. And there was no emotion or wait or let's find their families or what were they doing or anything extra.
Right.
So, yeah, I feel like the heaviest moments were some of Jack's backstory. And
even that felt like it swung and missed at a few things that I was hoping definitely. That they would. So let's take apart this. Yes, there were consequences to the actions of this surly crew, you know, the lives lost at the end, maybe because Yanto couldn't catch a Flask fast enough or whatever. But
It wasn't even that. It was that they were losing it through the air as it was falling. It wasn't Yanto. Don't blame this on him.
Well, if he could have just leapt up and caught it a little sooner, maybe got anyway. But compared to, we talk about the fact that, yeah, Torchwood is always full of doom and death and often dismemberment and things. But by that comparison, this was a gore-free episode, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody impaled on anything. But you've got even their attacks, if you want to call them attacks, are non-violent. You know, they're whatever. Somebody comes in real close and holds a flask to your mouth, and it's not brutal.
You can tell it's pre-COVID because people were just like, "Yeah, sure, walk right up to me,
way up in your face." Yeah, yeah. One of the resounding questions I had through this was, what was it about this company? You know, these night travelers. What was their deal? Why were they doing this? Was it something that they were all in on? Was it just the ringleader or ghost maker, as he likes to refer to himself, and Pearl's deal, whatever. But what was it that had them doing this in the first place when they gained this horrible reputation? And how did they get captured on film in the first place? Those two big question marks kind of kept me from really being able to accept a lot of the rest of the episode, you know?
I just had a revelation in my mind.
Oh, that's a good place to have a revelation.
It's a good place for it. So I feel like this, in terms of the villain, sort of correlates to the Weeping Angels, where people just start disappearing. They sort of steal the rest of time of your life. Mm-hmm. But again, the danger just wasn't there. And so that's where I feel like this fell short.
Well, right. That and the thing that, why were they doing this? Like, we never got an explanation for why the villains were doing this, aside from they're villains. They're meant to kill people. But, like, we don't know what they got out of it. What was the whole purpose of, like, oh, they need an audience, so they make that. It just didn't make any sense at all.
When they were sitting at the pool listening to the laughter, I think that they were trying to build up to gaining enough of the life force, mm-hmm. so that they could on first go round bring the rest of the company over, right. and then the second go round was becoming permanently affixed in this time versus being trapped in the celluloid.
That would make sense if we knew that they were working their way back towards whatever their original intent was. So why mm-hmm. were they capturing or
why did they have to steal people's lives right. to begin with? Which is where, so again, with the Weeping Angels, you kind of got some of that. They mm-hmm. told you why. They need time to live. They feed on the time. They never explained that for why they were stealing all of the saltiness of humans. The salty liquid. I don't know.
I don't know. I think if you just wanted to go lick sweat, you could just hang out near a Planet Fitness or something.
Yeah, hang out in the sauna.
I mean, if we're really talking about it, they're on the quay. There's salt water right there. Why has it got to be human salt water?
Yeah, whatever your fix is, there's probably more of it somewhere else.
And having the ghosts split from their bodies, but the bodies were still, their spirits were still somewhere in the back of some dugout-looking thing?
But no, breath, but yeah, there were the bodies at the back that stood there.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the science got really lost on this one, but that didn't bother me as much as, like, I didn't understand what the villains were after, so there was no real clear kind of, well, they go for this, and maybe this person's in danger. It's just every time you saw someone, it's like, maybe they're in danger, maybe they're not. Who knows? Because we don't know what they're after to begin with.
Right.
Yeah. And Jack should have known better for right. all oh, of
yeah.
that.
Yeah. That's a big left turn for me, because when Jack shows up in the footage at the beginning, or Yanto mm-hmm. points out the fact that Jack's in the footage, your mind immediately goes to, oh, Jack had like some nefarious thing going on in his past if he was running around with this crew. And then the explanation that we start to get out of him is that, oh, he was investigating them. For who? He doesn't say.
He doesn't, yeah.
He says it was like a side project or something like that. So that's another weird turn. And yet, he doesn't say he ever resolved it.
No.
So,
well, it's also not made clear. Like, it seems like he was saying he was in a different freak show trying yeah. to figure this one out. So right. there's not a clear distinction over, like, who we saw in there was part of the Night Travelers versus just somebody at a freak show that got caught on film.
Right. Just this one troop that, mm-hmm. that he was trying to, like, work his way into the circuit to try and find out who they were. Lost track of it. Thought, out of sight, out of mind. Here's 21st century, and they pop up again, and he's really slow to react.
But they're not even that old, because the old woman at the insane asylum, or whatever place where she was the care facility,
mm-hmm. the not really that lucid old. Person at the asylum. yeah.
Who just has crazy stories that people yeah. are judging her for and thinks
not
that-
even crazy stories. One crazy story that's not that crazy. Like, somebody tried to abduct her.
That was in the newspapers. So it's not...
Sure they did. Get in the bin.
yeah.
For the rest of your goddamn life.
So even with that, Jack has been on planet Earth for longer than this, we know. Mm-hmm. But it's not like he was tracking them to other planets and got stuck here at that time. So that doesn't even give Jack an out to say, well, I was hopping all these planets and then landed here. Now I'm stuck since then, because he's been around on Earth for longer than that. So, like, there's no good reason.
Well, it wasn't an official mission he was on. It was kind of a pet project of his, so he wasn't giving it 100%, maybe like 35%, and then he thought, oh, yeah, you know, I've shot myself in the head.
I'm actually times. Really good at this. I'll just stick around. And lost some brains in some of that smatter, and then...
Just a few. It's fine. It'll be fine.
Every other time we've seen him get shot, like, he actually dies and then revives... A couple minutes later, it's not a look. I can shoot myself in the head and nothing happens. Like
maybe he was avoiding the brain.
Yes,
and so he just healed.
Yeah,
and then instead of doing the whole wake up bit,
right? Can I ask though that how so the footage of all of this circus footage that was being spliced together by the kid at the beginning of the thing cut this chunk of footage in that had Jack on it. But the loop that was showing was only the Night Travelers and also Jack.
Well, but that was the thing. It was like he wasn't even splicing the stuff in there. Like it just showed up over top of the footage.
It grabbed Jack footage.
Yeah.
That kid just really was not good at splicing together footage. No. He had no idea what he was grabbing out of those tins.
You know why he wasn't a good film editor as he's working on the celluloid? No cigarette in his mouth.
Oh, yeah.
You're always supposed True. To be. Yeah, you have to.
And his bathtub was right next to his production studio.
That studio was jank.
Sometimes you just need a soak. That's.
Yeah, yeah. As the kids say, that studio was sus.
Which I noticed as when they walked in, as they were trying to track the. I guess it was when they were going to check the footage and the bathtub was still full. I was like, hey, volume displacement. Oh, the water's still running. Okay, I believe it now.
Like, that had a not mermaid in it just a few minutes ago. That yeah. shouldn't be that full. What was Pearl's deal?
She just really likes water.
I swear, but they kept like, if you were going to, just put, remember when they do the flashback, and they show everybody walking up, you know, 1920s, 30s or so, and they're starting to walk up to this sideshow display. And you've got the tattoo man, who's not really terribly impressive. He just has a handful of tattoos, and he's just posing a little bit.
It was dangerous back then to get tattoos.
Super, super dangerous.
So much Pepsi. Unless you were a sailor.
Right. And then, you know, the strong man, fine. Okay, the great Stromboli. Great name, by the way. If you can't name yourself after a food item, why are you even in this business? And then they get to Pearl, and the ghost maker, whatever, ghost maker, right?
Yeah.
Goes on this whole long diatribe about how she's as near to a mermaid as you could possibly be, you know, the bottoms of the oceans and blah, blah, blah. But you never get to see her in anything other than just like up to her nose in a ganky tub. Like if
I want the Houdini outfit, yeah, like her drowned, stuck at the bottom. Like,
yeah, she should have escaping. Been in a tank. Like at that, if I were to walk into that display,
there was
see her
a
just
tank.
Standing there. Yes, and she was standing
in front of it.
I want my 25 cents back.
We're not going to waste VisFX money on this black and white grainy shot.
At least stick her feet in the water.
It's too early for those dunk booths, so they didn't have the technology to make her fall.
That could have been great. I would have, well, anyway.
So does anyone else feel like they got half of an episode here? Like there was something that could have, because, I mean, let's be honest, the spooky carnival, always great for a, like, you know, instant kind of, all right, I understand the tone of this episode, I'm in. And then, okay, we're going to jump to the future, but we're going to keep going with that. But it was almost like if they had had more time, they could have done something better. I mean,
that's exactly, I think you're on the right track. Instead of saying like, well, necessarily we got half an episode, we got an underbaked episode. This was like the skeletal, like first draft pass.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to fill in some of the really good details later, and they just never did.
Yeah, and some of what they could have cut, I feel like, was the story of the family owning the theater. That had nothing, it never played out. He got scared about them having lost their breath, but that was, it didn't really strike as truly emotional and true. Like, he just panicked. And you watched him doing a lot of stuff for no payoff. We don't even see him again at the end.
The three minutes of him running with the film canister in the rain at the beginning, it's like, just get there already. I get it. It's a long distance. It takes a while. You've got to run apparently through warehouses.
But what does that play into for the story? Was that someone's nephew who just wanted to be on film? Like,
right.
How were they related to it?
Well, I mean, I feel like the whole, like all of the victims, it was confusing to me because, okay, at the end, well, we catch the thing and there's still one left. Okay, so we saved a child who's going to need therapy for the rest of his life because he's on fire. Like, what was the purpose of having one person saved? Like, and we never, like, there was never any kind of payoff to it. So it
and
was like,
he was happy. He right, was no, hugging so, Jack and so like, happy.
Are you my papa now?
You could have either killed everybody or killed no one and had the exact same emotional payoff at the end. Like, there was no weight to it at all. So why save this one person? Like, you know, discussing this with my fiance, she was like, well, maybe it was like, you know, you had the one old lady who survived the last time they were there. I'm like, then, you know, like, have Jack, when they save him, say something like, there's always one left or something, like, you know, something to draw attention to the fact that, you know, this has happened before. Yeah. But there wasn't any of that. It was just you like, know, hey, we saved one. Yeah. And that was it.
Maybe Torchwood just didn't want to kill a kid.
they killed
his sister. Sister.
Also, Torchwood kills a lot of kids.
Just wait. Spoilers.
I also
want to say that it, along that line, that the slowness with which these villains attacked anyone, like, slowly creep up on them, sure, but make them hit clubs, like, big venues, like, have them stroll down the street and knock out an entire row of houses or something to raise the stakes a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yes, they lost, what, 7 people out of the 8? This should have been 50, 60, 70 before Torchwood finally catches them. Something like that.
Bloodthirsty monster.
Yeah, and all that we see of them is them sitting in an empty pool during the day. They're still out, so it's not like they're attached to the rain only for being alive.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they're just like, oh, listen to this seashell with all of our voices in it. Instead of, what are you doing? Go gather more spirits. What was your point?
Yeah. That was a very long retrospective scene for them too, that I don't really know what we gained from it other than just the fact it gave the two actors an opportunity to just be sort of creepy for a little while. It didn't advance the story.
And again, you could have done that a little bit better in having them interacting with going up to people's houses, mm-hmm. pitching the show, doing something else so that maybe make it Halloween and they're just like around touching people all over the place and no one realizes it until the whole block is fallen over.
Yeah. I also get the impression that they're at a bit of a disadvantage because since they have just popped out 80 to 90 years after they were last, walking the earth, that they're at a loss. Like, they don't understand what's going on. They walk up to somebody at a bus stop and she's like, just brush them off. The learning curve that they were up against was definitely
I would have loved to have seen them get like maced at that point. Like, the lady pulls out the pepper spray from the purse and just goes, because they don't know
how it should have ended, and they just melt. Yep,
that's just it.
But that was one thing that really bothered me, is they're tied to the film, so like they've turned into cellulose. So if we film them and expose it, that didn't make any sense to me at all. Like, okay, they've bonded with this celluloid. They bonded with this film that they were part of. So let's go and burn that film, and that kills them. We have to like go on this hunt to find the specific film that they were from and destroy that somehow, and then they're gone. Fine, I could accept that. But you film them on brand new film and then expose that, and that managed. How does that work?
I guess because they didn't get enough breaths, they're still weakened. I'm helping the writer here as best I can.
But how did Jack know how many breaths?
Because clearly they were still hunting. And because Stromboli was still popping out of the screen. So clearly so the job
what
wasn't
I wish
done
had happened is that Jack, you know, in the whatever, the 20s or whatever, had made it into their group and infiltrated. So he had some knowledge about them before they got away last time. I think it would have made this whole episode work better.
Yeah. That leads me to a
which that would make sense. I'm sorry. No, you were going to say that's
okay. Well, I just wanted to know, were they aware of the fact? Like, did they escape into the film, or was that through no effort of their own? You know, this was like, because they kept saying that, you know, the advent of film and things like that did away with the circus sideshows, and that was sort of the death of them, right? So was this an escape pod that they were somehow aware of? And they're like, oh, this person's coming around with this strange film box thing, and maybe there's a way where – I don't know how that would possibly work, because they didn't seem like the brightest bunch in the out there. But how?
Because of the rift.
Because rift
activity. But I'm – so
rift,
back to Haley's point, though, that would make a little bit more sense, because Jack does race to the theater when – he realizes that's what they're doing and where they're going. So if they had played up that, saying that he was a little bit more aware and part of it, and that now Yanto's got this weird obsession with going to all these theaters, and then he realizes, oh, it's that one, that does make a little bit, I think that would play better into it and make a little bit more sense. But I don't know. I still think that the way that it played out and the film didn't work for me. Yeah. But I liked the way that they got the vial from the guy by sort of tag team whacking him from the...
he just threw it.
No, but how they originally sort of...
Oh, yes.
Gwen and Yanto tag teamed him, and I thought was a good moment of brevity in this very weird interaction between all of them. You run in and you're just waiting for them to come out.
Right.
You're not even going to try to attack them.
The team on the whole was very unlike themselves through a lot of this. Jack was not doing a lot of the take charge. I've got this. I know more information than I'm letting on, so I'm going to be cryptic, but still really proactive. That wasn't really there. Yanto was kind of true to form, Yanto, insofar as he had a funny little side obsession that's important to him, and he gets emotional about it and what have you, has to jump into action at the final moment when it's really not something I enjoy doing, but I'll do it if I have to. But Tosh, I've completely...
She stood in front of that one monitor the entire episode.
Yep, forgettable. Gwen, sidelined, really useless. Mm-hmm. And Owen, other than the fact that he had that one comedic moment where he said, you have no breath. Nah, I don't. Okay. Mm-hmm. Other than that, useless throughout. Yeah. So
I
feel this was an underutilized episode slot.
I also would have accepted if they took red light and sort of shined that on them somehow, like
undeveloped them.
Undeveloped them, like with chemicals and red light or something, instead of filming the film to release it into the light, or...
Yeah, maybe they would lose all their power in a dark room or something, or... Because the complete absence of anything.
Or if they had done the thing where they like only came out at night, and then exposing them to sunlight was like exposing the film to sunlight, and that's how you wipe them out.
So right. Like a vampire, but you have to like catch light in a bottle or UV lights, and you just
I think that like we all kind of feel the same way, that there was some decent bones of this. Like somebody had an interesting story concept. And it just completely fell apart the minute that they tried to actually do anything with it.
Yeah.
Somebody was like, I've got this idea for a freak show story, and that's it.
Yeah.
Right.
Because they didn't even bother to explain why.
Yeah.
Even with some of the, like the half-cocked villains that we've had both in Doctor Who and Torchwood and so on, or even when you've got just sort of a monster of the week from the Sarah Jane Adventures or something, at least you had some either a motivation or a mechanism. Or both, hopefully both. But in this one, there really was no motivation other than just stand there and look creepy. Except for you, tattooed guy. Just stand there. And
no, arms up.
Arms up. Yeah,
a little
arms
bit higher. Up.
Yeah, because all of your tattoos are only on the upper half of you. But motivation. Like, what's the end goal to this? Is it survival? Okay, if it's survival, are they eating souls? Do they get up to a certain amount so they can make a nice soul casserole? Or I... So I guess I'll ask, if this isn't the worst Torchwood story we watched so far, I'm assuming it's fairly low in the ranking.
I mean, it might be the worst season two story.
Yeah.
That
may be so, which is unfortunate seeing as where we are in the season right now. Like how many?
Three left.
Three left to go?
Yeah.
I actually remember the next episode, though. They were showing the previews for it. And I was like, oh, I remember this one.
Oh, cool. Haley's going to be the expert next time.
Yeah, I don't think it adds anything to the storyline. We didn't see anyone come or go. No major revelations except for Jack can die, but not really.
Yeah,
and
it
also,
doesn't even really add anything to Jack.
And that he's so disorganized that 90 years ago and his lifespan is also fading from his memory.
Oh, and Yanto likes historical documentary films.
Yeah.
There you go. Which you could probably live without.
And he ran.
Yes. Watching Yanto run is worth the price of admission. That is all. I think we were both just giggling. We're like, look at him move his arms. Look at him go.
He's been practicing that run for however long since the first day of filming.
Well, you don't know how his suits fit. I mean, he's always very, very well dressed, but they may not be the most comfortable across a wide stride. Or anything. So he might have to check his stride a little bit, but his arms have motion. So he's like really, really big arms, but little tiny steps. I don't know. There could be a lot of things at play.
You sound like you're speaking from experience.
Maybe his shoes don't fit well.
Oh, well. Can't win them all.
Next week, we're going to be coming back with our classic rewatch, and this is the final story of Season 18, Logopolis.
Yep. That's it. That's all we're going to say.
Yep. Yeah.
So, watch it, okay. and we'll talk to Julie and Haley next week. See you next week.
This has been episode 415 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, I'm not going to travel with your circus troupe for... you've got kettle corn. All right, yeah, I'm in.
Oh. This is Kier saying, cinema killed the carnival star.
I was waiting for where that was going to come
in.
There
you go.
This is Julie saying, sometimes I think it's okay if your eyes are older than your face.
And this is Haley saying, I'm going to run away and join the circus.
We'll see you next week.
And Lizzie.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Want to keep the conversation going? You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, or just send us a good old-fashioned email to feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. You can also give us a phone call at 754-225-5477. That's 754-CALL-GPR, and you may hear your voice on a future episode of the show. Everything's got to end sometime, otherwise nothing would ever get started. Join us next week for a brand new episode.
Hi, I'm Jacob Hansen. Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2021. We'll see you next week.